Another time was the F4 where the general died. We're on our mission in up in North Vietnam, flying around. We heard a Mayday, Mayday. He's an F4, an RF4C Phantom. He's calling Mayday. He's been hit just above the DMZ. And so now we're out. We're going to join up with him to fly his wingman to try to escort him back to Da Nang or something. Now, those rescue missions, those missions, the reconnaissance missions that those guys flew. Now, when we're in North Vietnam, we're going like stink, and we're janking all the time. Random janking, janking, janking. So they could never do it. But those guys, at 500 feet and 500 knots, straight and level. And I used to help them get their start point and then orbit over them as they were going. But here's an airplane that's going straight and level for I don't know how many minutes to do their click, 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 pattern. I thought, boy, to fly around up here straight and level, that takes cojones, right? And I knew one thing, that there was only company-grade officers that flew those airplanes, captains, second lieutenants. It was very rare that you had a major or a lieutenant colonel. I had absolutely no idea that the front seat was a general officer. It was a general officer on his last mission. It was his going-home mission. It was his sandplane flight. And his mission was over, and he was going home. General Bob Worley. And he was the only fighter pilot in headquarters Saigon that was a fighter pilot. The rest of them were, any bomber pilots here? Okay, any bomber pilot?
You're safe.
Okay, well, everybody, all the generals up there were all bomber pilots. And there was a big controversy about, couldn't understand, why do you dive at the target? To take a target out. Why are you diving? He says, well, why don't you just fly level and drop the bombs? So anyway, that's the kind of leadership that we had sometimes. But Bob Worley, he was a treasure. I did not know that there was a general officer in front. When I joined up on his wing, I was looking at a white helmet, and I thought I was talking to a lieutenant or a lowly captain like me. And there would be a navigator in the back seat, something, right? That's my perception of this whole thing. And we had a conversation back and forth. But I was not talking to the general. I was talking to a CNI major. You know what a CNI major is?
Yeah, I've spoken with them.
It's probably the toughest job in the Air Force, to fly along and take care of a general officer. So when we pulled in on them and found out they had a fire up in the front of the cockpit, or in front of the fuselage, up in the camera bay, you can see it burning and stuff. So he pulled out and says, okay, you got a fire in the nose, and now we're over the Gulf of Tonkin, we're 10,000 feet, the right airspeed, perfect conditions for an ejection. Ideal. And so I thought, hey, this is cool. So I pulled out the route formation, and I can see, I wanted to be that close, and see the Martin Baker ejection system work, the canopy, the rocket motor, the parachute deployment, to be that close. I said, this is really cool. Here again, thinking that there was a captain up front or a lieutenant, and who was in the back. And it was this neat as hell. The back canopy come off in slow motion, and I made special note about how much it cleared the tail. That's really important. Okay, and right after that, the seat starts up, the rails, and then the rocket motor ignites. And the thing is, the rocket motor comes up and the seat is stable as it can be. It comes up. As soon as the rocket motor turned off, a little drogue chute comes off, pitches the guy back, and the drogue chute pulls the main parachute out, and the parachute inflates. Of course, all this is happening, and I'm watching it behind me like that. It comes out, and I says, wow, that is really cool to be able to see something like that. So I turned around and looked, and what I saw in the front cockpit, I'll never forget. The front cockpit was full of fire. Because whatever happened, the pressure of the back canopy leaving and the fire up in the nose had burned through the cockpit area, pressurization area, and it destroyed it. And all that fire right now was being sucked through the front cockpit and out the canopy in the back that was gone. And the fire was so intense that the fire was all the way over the top of the airplane and it started burning the tail of the airplane. And I'll never forget the cockpit full of fire and that white helmet sitting there. And he didn't eject. I thought, yeah, why isn't he eject? Doesn't he know he's on fire? Okay, now, you got to understand the psychology of this. And so I thought, well, I better tell him that you're on fire and maybe you ought to eject. So in my screaming tone, I was saying, strobe on one, bail out, strobe on one, bail out, bail. I just screaming at him to get out. And he still sat there right in the middle of this huge fire. And I thought, aha, I know why he can't hear me. I'm too far away. So from route formation, which is what, 2 to 4 wingspans, I drove that F-100 in as close as I could, thinking that if I get close to him, now he can hear me and he will eject. Is that absurd? I mean, what are you going to do? I'm looking at this horrible thing that was just a big shock. And so I drove that old F-100 in as close as I could get, and I hit him. Still screaming at him. I hit him. Well, air pressure. And that old Phantom, I rolled him up like that, and I said, oh, damn. And I pulled back, and it turned exactly 90 degrees and was heading right for the beach. It was the most beautiful, a perfectly smooth glide, descent right to the beach. So I went back and rejoined with him again, still screaming the same thing. And in horror, watching that white canopy, that white helmet, as it disappeared in black, and the front part of the Phantom was the paint was being blistered, and now the fire was gone. There's this acrid smoke that went all the way over, and I couldn't even see the top of the tail. You just didn't want to leave him. It's a fellow captain, fellow lieutenant. And I stayed right on his tail, and there's one guy that was with me. His name is Don Harlan, and he's not here today. But he has a secret that only him and I know. I'm right beside him, and I don't want to leave him. And I darn near, if it hadn't been for Don saying, Dick, pull up. And I looked up, and we damn near crashed right beside him. It screwed me up so much. And I pulled up, and there was a big, huge fireball right beside us and pulled up. And they come back, and it says, is there any survival? Any survival? As we pulled up to go out to see the backseater, he says, negative survival, negative survival. And that was it. Final. Now, we'd seen a lot of crashed airplanes, a whole bunch of shoot downs and stuff in the 8 months that I was up there. And normally they just write it off. Okay, airplane crash, no survivors, get on with the war. But for some reason, they were flying a whole bunch of security in there, and they're going to have surround the area with security. And they were going to have a lot of medevacs, a whole bunch of attention to this crash site. And it never dawned on me what the hell it was all about. So I pulled up, there the parachute was hanging. And as he was coming down, I noticed that there was some motorized junks coming off the shore out to get him. Well, you don't mess with a pilot. And we got some really good rescue things. The Jolly Greens will come up and pick them up, and that'll be cool. But we don't want any motorized South Vietnamese or North Vietnamese junks motorized coming out to get our pilot. And so he says, okay, we're going to dozen them right across their bow. That didn't work. So I pulled up around, and Harlan was in the front seat that day. I was their instructor pilot. And I says, okay, go ahead and kill them. And so at the last minute, I thought, why don't you just put some strafe across their nose? You know, we don't know who they are. Maybe they're here, ready to help. Maybe they're not. Can't take a chance. So he goes right in front of their nose. And it's kind of rough that day. And he was going along like that. And all of a sudden, and he goes, whoop, doop, 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 doop. And he beat feet back, and the Jollies picked him up. And I got to hear their story from their point of view. But there was a lot of frustration like that sometimes.
Dick, I got to say thank you. It's a sad story to end on, but that's war. That's what you guys did. And a lot of frustration, as you say, but a lot of heroism out there, too. A lot of dedicated warriors who did the job, regardless of what the politicians had to say. And I'm here to say thank you for what you did.
Well, it was really frustration. And if you got a minute, I'll tell you about my last mission.